White Boys Podcast. We show entertainment stuff. Billy and Seth, David and Billy, and David and Seth, and Billy again. This is the best show in the entire world. Movies, TV, video games. Enjoy the show.
Jurassic World.
You guys hear that music? You know what that means. It's time for the Jurassic World White Noise Spoiler Cast, guys. Yeah. Which, you know, this movie's about to hit $1 million worldwide box office. It broke the record for, you know, most money ever in one weekend. It broke the record for most money on a Monday, domestic and worldwide. But is the movie that good? Here to talk about that, it's Billy White, myself, David Hunter, and Seth Juniak.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's at least good, I would say. I mean, it's not incredible, but it's, you know, it's a good movie, and definitely your kind of summer popcorn thriller, you know, science fiction action epic that that I come to enjoy during this time of year, where I'm just expecting to sit back, you know, eat some popcorn, and watch something that engages me and I enjoy watching, and it definitely accomplished that, and I'm glad to see that dinosaurs ruled the box office once again.
But did it capture your heart? That's the question.
My heart? Well, yes. I learned that I have to stick together with my fellow comrades, Seth and Billy, to survive, you know, out in the wild.
So this is probably going to be, like, of all movies I've seen that I actually enjoyed, I could probably make fun of this movie more than most of them.
This was
well, that's because you're a jerk, but that's fine. not
to ruin all of your childlike hopes and dreams, but this was like a movie that, and look, we need these kind of movies, but this was a so bad it's good type of movie for me.
By the way, we need to talk about the fact that this podcast, this is the Verizon White Noise Spoiler Cast podcast, guys. I want to make sure that you're not Seth Juniak anymore. You're Pepsi Juniak.
No, it's Pepsi. It's Pepsi Cola or Pepsi Pepsi.
Pepsi Pepsi.
What am I, Bilks Hunter?
Bilks Hunter.
There's a bidding war for both of my names, and Pepsi won both of them.
My name is. We haven't released my name yet, so we'll see how that goes. We're hoping to pull in six figures for that one, but it's pretty. It was pretty great though. The
Are you
way
saying
this
my
TV...
name wouldn't pull six figures.
Well, what happened was, Seth, your name was the phone that was first introduced, and, you know, Pepsi got it within a deal that wasn't just monetary-based.
Don't,
like, there was
don't insult my lawyers. My lawyers can not negotiate the crap out of some things, man.
Okay, fine. You're Canadian. That's why I didn't go as high.
Well, no, I'm just saying that maybe I've got I'm holding out for a Tim Hortons deal.
This movie, one thing, we talk about sponsorships, this movie did a great job of being very meta with the blatant, you know, product placement in this movie. I think the one time...
Well, and blockbuster movies in general, too. I mean, talking about...
All right. I think we should do our favorite blatant commercialism moment.
Okay, so my favorite was when Owen Grady, Chris Pratt's character, when they go to his house and they show Claire Dearing, who is Bryce Dallas Howard's character, when she shows up to the house, they have a very, like, quick, like, center frame on his car, and it was either a Toyota Honda, I don't remember what it was, but I remember seeing the car so clearly at the time before going to Owen Grady.
I thought it was, like, every car in it was a Mercedes, I thought.
Maybe it was.
Thought it was a Mercedes.
I don't really remember what kind of car it was. I just remember because I'm not really a car guy. I just remember the exact center frame on the car.
The center frame is the 3-star, I thought. Or maybe, yeah. I just remember every car thinking, hey, look, there's another Mercedes, and they're not going to let me forget that this is a Mercedes, because every scene that car was in, they showed the front. And, you know, Mercedes has that hood ornament that is very, very blatant. But
well, what was yours?
I like favorite. The part with the dinosaurs, you know, because it's a movie about dinosaurs attacking people, eating people. You know, it's good fun. You eat popcorn, you watch dinosaurs chasing people.
What was the blatant advertising there, though, in the dinosaurs?
Jimmy Fallon. That was probably the blatant advertising.
My favorite was, let's go back to that Owen Grady scene. My favorite is the, I can't do anything, I'm busy. Then he takes a long, long sip of Coca-Cola. Very long sip.
So, So my favorite thing about going to we all went to Alabama, and the press conference for Alabama, for anyone who's ever seen it, Nick Saban goes up there after X amount of time, the whole media's there. But always on his little podium is a bottle of Coke. And if that bottle of Coke is not there before he comes out, some guy will run out and place the Coke and run back. For a while, I thought it was just glued there.
Yeah, I did too. I always assumed that it was cemented to the podium. It never left. And in fact, I wondered at times if it was even a real bottle of Coke. If it was just decorative and just a part of the desk.
Well, yeah, it's pretty much every single scene. That's kind of this movie is like in a nutshell. Anytime they had an opportunity, like, okay, guys, so this movie's going to make $500 billion. You should, you know, you want to put your product in there? It's great,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, guys,
yeah.
The courtyard, what stores were there? We have to ask ourselves this question. I saw a Jamba Juice. I know from the commercials that there's a Dairy
Queen
there. There's
definitely a Dairy Queen.
There is at least one Starbucks. I think there might be two.
I actually think there is two Starbucks because I was actually thinking about that because you have one like on the left side in the back and then one like the front on the right.
I know this is an American courtyard, so it has to have two Star Wars.
I was gonna say it's certainly not realistic for there to be stores in, you know, an amusement park. That's completely unbelievable. I've never seen that before in my life. Just like there shouldn't be dinosaurs. That's not realistic either.
Oh, David. I knew you. It's kind of funny. Me and Seth are going to have so much fun with this movie. And David, who Jurassic Park's like his favorite movie, and he loves this franchise. He's going to be so defensive and upset when we do this. It's going to be so great. I'm excited about this. Can we do the, can we talk about that?
My happiness is extinct.
Can we talk about the two? Okay, so the movie, for those who haven't watched trailers and know nothing about this movie, you shouldn't be listening to this. But for those who have watched, obviously the little two boys are the vehicle for a lot of the action. And they got sent by their parents to visit their aunt, and she's the world's worst aunt for the first half of the movie, clearly. And she doesn't even know their age. How do you not know your nephew's age? I mean, come on.
They introduce a couple storylines in this whole family. Like, first off, you know, as you kind of said, we get these kids. They go to aunt's house. I guess she's the cool aunt or something. Why the parents are so quick to watch their kids, we don't really introduce us to that, but... Then we meet Bryce Dallas Howard's character, and she's just like, so career, me, blah, 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 blah. They don't really answer that, I don't think, but obviously, you know, I don't think she really cares about the kids, like you said, not knowing the age, but...
And then, like, you know, toward the end of the movie, obviously, now she cares about kids, and she may want to have kids. I don't know. It seemed very Hollywood-y. You had, like the scenes where, like, she watched the woman with the baby... You know,
I mean, of course it seemed Hollywood-y. You know, it's a summer blockbuster movie that's kind of trying to emulate what Steven Spielberg did with his movies in the 90s and 80s. Very classic storyline in those type of films with the...
I think it's trying to emulate Steven Spielberg. I think
it definitely was Steven Spielberg. Exactly.
I
mean, if that's what you weren't expecting when you went to go see this movie, then, yeah, you might be a little bit surprised that it's sticking, you know, with some cliches such as that. But, I mean... I definitely think that movie, that's what it was trying to do, is kind of copy that kind of classic storyline. Like you saw with the kids, yeah, there were some really just kind of cheesy dialogue when they were talking about divorce, and we'll get into later.
Yeah, I want to role play that real quick. I think that'd be fun. Okay, Seth,
you know, I'm just saying, this didn't come out of left
field to me. It'll be older brother. Go ahead, Seth.
Mom and Dad are divorcing.
No, they aren't. You're dumb.
I Googled it.
Whatever. My friends are divorced. I don't care. It doesn't matter. We get two of everything.
Oh my God.
I don't want two of everything.
Yeah, I don't want two of everything. Shut up. You're a kid. Yes, you do.
Nah. All right. Continue, David. Continue.
No, man. I think we've covered the bases on that part of the movie.
So
it was definitely cheesy, and it was definitely... Not exactly. It wasn't very good writing, but I mean, it didn't really. It was like what, a 3-minute scene in the film. It didn't derail a movie that I came to go watch about dinosaurs.
It was hilarious in the unintentional comedy scale.
Yeah, I mean, it was unintentionally funny in retrospect. I didn't really. I guess I don't know. I guess I was too immersed in the movie to really let that derail my experience and to dwell on it for too long. Because you know, I was watching. Yeah,
this
is Jurassic World. It's a movie about dinosaurs. Yeah, about dinosaurs, a dinosaur amusement park that go loose and attack people.
But the dinosaurs didn't even break loose yet.
No.
Also, like, really, if you think about it, right? Like, who else saw the preview, saw all the people running, and were like, yes, the giant T-Rex thing that, you know, was a hybrid. We didn't know what it was called then, but we knew, like, a genetic hybrid. Like, that thing's gonna come in and start attacking people. Now, that's not actually what happens. But I was hoping that was why all the people were, like, running from the front of the entrance. Instead, it was
it was actually an invasion of crows and bats that caused all the panic in the park and caused the power to go out. There were no dinosaurs. It was false advertising.
Well, they weren't pterodactyls because they were, like, they had to be a hybrid of something, probably, you know?
They were half pterodactyls, half fruit bat.
Half fruit bat, half fire ant.
100%
I mean, I have a lot of faith that Jack Horner...
Half velociraptor.
I have a lot of faith that Jack Horner, the guy who's kind of behind the Jurassic Park think tank behind the design of the dinosaurs and the way that they're created and the way they're supposed to look and the way they act. I mean, he's kind of the professional paleontologist that's been around since the, you know, Jurassic Park film. And he has a lot of detail with Stan Winston in designing the creatures in the movie. So he has some pretty good insight into the, you know, pterodactyls or obviously the Indominus Rex, which is an interesting thing they talk about because they kind of tackle something different in this movie as opposed to, you know, before where they're just typical dinosaurs, you know, combined with frog DNA. So they were kind of hybrids anyways. This one kind of takes it a step further and talks about making a scarier, more vicious dinosaur with more teeth. They're trying to, you know, to kind of fall into that capitalist criticism theme that they're going for in genetics and using the genetics abilities to create scarier dinosaurs to improve the park response. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way to tackle the movie.
Legit, I liked that that was a way that they tried to kind of base the whole plot in something like that. And they did it really believable. Like, you know, the one scene where they are talking about, you know, oh, you know, this is what it is. We did this, that, and this, and that, and this is what it genetically is. And I liked how they tried to root it there. And really, of all the plot, kind of the way the plot was fashioned, that's one I actually really liked. And, you know, I liked that they tried to base this in science instead of this just being, you know, kind of mindless and senseless.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of funny because you say that they, you know, they base it in science, but let's be honest here, it's not, it's pop science, it's pseudoscience. They're not particularly going for extreme accuracy, but it is like a feasible, you know, within the world of Jurassic Park and within the world of this franchise, it's kind of a feasible point to create a movie around. And so you kind of buy it in that kind of movie, even if it might not be truly scientifically accurate. But it's hard to make movies that are that way.
They brought back Dr. Henry Wu, which was cool, from the first movie. Also, there's a couple things I liked about the whole stuff with genetics. Is one, okay, obviously dinosaurs are boring now. People want something new and exciting. That does sound like a consumerism, like capitalist America that we live in. Two, I like the fact they named it the Indominus Rex because obviously the real name was too hard to pronounce. So they went with Indominus. Like, that was smart. I like that.
Like Indomican Sue, I think. They have a G. They have
Indomican Rex.
Indomican Sue.
That's the last.
They threw that in there.
Velociraptor, guys.
That's what makes him such an angry, aggressive creature.
Yes,
he has an Indomitian Sue DNA.
He gets his carnivorous nature from Tyrannosaurus Rex, and he gets his wreaking havoc on defense or offensive lines from Indomitian Sue.
He has an extreme. He has an extremely aggressive disposition towards quarterbacks.
I also like the fact that the Velociraptors, regardless of what you think about Velociraptors being trained for military use or not, I love the way they handle the way, like, they were acted like Velociraptors how I imagine they would, the fact that they act like in a pack, how they're probably lightly controlled killing machines to a certain extent, you know? And the interesting idea of using the gun for military use, kind of a cool idea that seems like something some crazy guy would think, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was far-fetched. It was very summer, you know, popcorny crap, but, I mean,
it was
fun to watch. It was fun to watch, like you said, and I enjoyed watching it. And the whole, you know, it's fun to see Wilson Fisk, which I haven't seen. I haven't finished Daredevil yet, guys. I'm sure we're going to bring that up. Just want to throw that out there and, you know, admit that before we continue even further with this.
I've got kind of like a big, you know, big picture question for you guys. So Colin Trevorrow is the guy who directed this, who, coming fresh off the success of Safety Not Guaranteed, some indie film in 2012 that starred our boy. I mean, I think he's a friend of the podcast, or I moved
from the league.
Friend of the podcast, Jake Johnson.
Yeah,
I love Jake Johnson.
But either way, let me go back to the question. Colin Trevorrow was the director, and he directed like one moderate indie film success.
He had no blockbuster experience whatsoever.
He had no movie experience, let alone blockbuster experience. So, like, is this what we're going to get? I mean, granted, the type of movie it is, I mean, it was going to sell. It was going to, you know, go off without a hitch. And really, this is the kind of direct acting job that is, you know, you just kind of man the ship. You don't really need to do some heavy lifting. I mean, you're not trying to do some huge mise-en-scene stuff. But Colin Trevorrow, do you think this was the future of directing? And do you think other studios are going to try and copy that kind of thing?
You mean going for the cheap labor to just pump out the franchise film?
That's a good way of asking it, but, you know.
Instead of going for, like, a Steven Spielberg or, God forbid, a Michael Bay.
No, here's
what
I think.
Colin Trevorrow.
I think Jurassic World 2 is going to be Paul Thomas Anderson. I'm just saying, right now.
Yeah, people were kind of looking at, you know, Colin Trevorrow as being a ambitious, you know, out there artistic hire, and I always thought, you know, when I looked at it, I was like, this is going to be a disaster. I was not very positive going into this movie, believe it or not, even as a fan of Jurassic Park. I didn't like the third movie. The second movie was definitely a step down from the first movie, even though it was still fun. And from the trailers, I thought this was going to be a disaster I was going to hate. And so I thought going into this movie that he was a guy that was just kind of going there for the paycheck, and they were trying to make it as cheaply as possible. And it turned out that, I mean, I was somewhat right, but I liked it. And so I think that that's definitely something we might see of more in the future with the success of this movie, and they probably got a higher profit margin than if they had gone with a big-name director. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see, you know, maybe the Marvel movies start doing this, maybe the future Star Wars sequels go with that kind of smaller-name director because of the financial success this had even without a big name attached to it, because the franchise sold itself in this case.
Yeah, I mean, clearly what happens is, oh, dinosaurs. Oh, we like Jurassic Park. Oh, Chris Pratt's really likable, and then the movie.
Yeah, he was
sold,
the one that really sold the movie, I think. I mean, that's.
Yeah, and they made $1 billion, pretty much, after 2 weeks, and I guess it really wasn't much more complicated than that. You could have had anyone really direct that movie, it seems, and wouldn't have made that much of a difference in the box office.
But I did definitely notice the inexperienced show in this case. Because, I mean, when I compare, you know, Jurassic Park's action sequences to what we get in Jurassic World, Jurassic Park has a ton of iconic sequences in that movie where you can definitely see that Steven Spielberg was involved and his craft involved with the scenes that were happening because of the creativity in which they were made, the detail that was, you know, put into those action sequences. In this case, there's only really one or two sequences in Jurassic World that stand out to me, and neither of them really were as well crafted as those sequences that I'm thinking about with Steven Spielberg. Like with Steven Spielberg, you have the car in the tree sequence where they're going down the tree and, you know, they're having to climb down the tree, and it's something that doesn't even involve dinosaurs, but it's still exciting to watch. You have the scene where the T-Rex, you know, escapes from the pen. You have the water with the tremors from the T-Rex walking around that's shaking. And you have the scene with the flare where Malcolm's waving it side, or Grant's waving it side to side, and he's attracting the Rex. And they do something like that in this one, but it worked better in the first movie to me. And then also you have the raptors in the kitchen where they're seeing their reflection and it's chasing the girl. You know, she's in her reflections in the side of the kitchen equipment, and it rams into it. I mean, that was something that was very thrilling and definitely at the time was very well done. This movie didn't really have anything like that. The best sequence, in my opinion, was obviously that great finale, but even that was mostly CGI and not something that really goes to to a well-directed action sequence as much as it is just excellent animation and a good idea.
You mean watching two T-Rexes fight each other? No, that's pretty much all it is. You could put that anything in it.
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome, but I mean, there was... Yeah, exactly. Sorry, you can go, Seth. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
He's just so excited to talk about Jurassic Park movies.
No, that final scene, actually, the closest reminder it had was the I'm not sure if any of you guys saw the Godzilla remake, where it's a lot of transients for a long, long time, then Godzilla shows up, breathes down the friggin' Mothra's neck, and, like, just explodes him, and then, like, everything's like, ah!
Just like the ultimate fan service. Especially
I don't think that's fan service. I mean, you should want your whole movie to be filled with that.
No.
I understand, you know, some of these qualifications you're making, David, but I thought I was just kind of not really dreading my existence the whole time watching the movie, but, like, the movie to me was just kind of average. And then that last scene happened. I'm like, oh, cool. Why didn't we get more of this?
I'm actually entirely with you though. I was like, the whole movie, I wish they had more scenes like that. Like I said, the whole, when you watch the trailers, you saw those people running from the park. Oh, cool, Peter can get being eaten by this T-Rex or something. No, instead it's, he kills some, you know, bunch of guys they hire, military security guys, mostly off screen.
That was a pretty well done scene in my opinion though. That was like the other one that stood out in my mind was the scenes involving the soldiers going into the woods and the Indominus Rex, you know, killing them off one by one and flashing to the screen with the heartbeat sensors going dead. I mean, I thought that was, it was cliched in terms of the way, the idea behind it, but it was fun for this movie, and I thought it fit pretty well.
to me.
And then also the fat guy getting eaten while he's hiding behind the truck. That was pretty terrifying.
I did like that.
Going back to the heart monitor thing, that kind of, like, to me, that was kind of like the people in the control room were, like, playing a real-time strategy game, like, watching all their units getting wasted one by one.
It's like watching someone play like StarCraft or something, you know.
By the way, I'm glad
we need additional pylons. The Indominus Rex is coming.
I'm glad you mentioned the controller. Jake Johnson, my boy. I love that scene with, I think it's Lauren Lapkus, the other employee there, when he goes.
She's in Orange is the New Black. That's kind of where I know her from. And then, of course, Jake Johnson from New Girl, which is a show that's. I'd recommend it if it wasn't so terrible, if that makes sense.
Is it a friend of the show?
It used to be good. It's not lately. He's also in this movie called Drinking Buddies, which is really good. Most people didn't see it.
I like Drinking Buddies. I was weird. I don't know. I'm weird with Drinking Buddies.
It's a weird movie.
It's a very weird movie, and the amount of the amount of talent that movie has is uncanny for what it is. it's like, what is it? It's Olivia Munn. It's Anna Kendrick. I think it's Jason Sudeikis opposite.
I like all those people.
Opposite Jake Johnson. Am I right with that? I think it's Jason.
I don't think it's Jason Sudeikis. Trying to think who
Jason
it was.
Jason Day.
Yeah, it's definitely Olivia. No, it's Olivia Wilde, by the way. It's Ron Livingston. Ron Livingston.
Hey, Olivia Munn is the same person as Olivia Wilde, I thought.
No.
I don't know.
They have the same acting abilities, but.
He's not the opposite to it was Ron Livingston for sure. But anyways, not important. But Black is, I love that scene with Jake Johnson and Lauren Lapkus. Like, he goes to kiss. He's like, oh yeah, I have a boyfriend, because it's a great, of all the movie tropes, and also what they showed earlier with Chris Pratt. I mean,
it was one that they were able to subvert and make look humorous. It was kind of subverting that trope that you would expect in a movie like.
Also, I just like Jake Johnson. He's got his little dinosaurs on his desk. He's wearing his Jurassic Park
shirt. Yeah, that was one thing I really liked about the movie, was when he was wearing the Jurassic Park shirt, and how the park direct, how Bryce Dallas Howard's character's like, oh, that's in poor taste. You shouldn't be wearing that shirt. It was just kind of a nice little dodge to the first movie, and just kind of how in retrospect, how it was something that nobody wanted to talk about because it was such a tragedy,
But it's kind of funny. It's like, oh, man, Jurassic Park was such a tragedy. How could he be wearing that shirt even though we pretty much just did the same thing over again? Like, I don't know. It's like, it was a horrible tragedy as we re-bring everything back.
But it's the really same thing happened.
Yeah, it's really ironic, I think.
I just wonder where they're going to take this franchise after this movie, because they've already pretty much greenlighted the Jurassic Park 5. I'm hoping that it's not going to be what this movie was supposed to be, which was Dino Super Soldiers. I'm really hoping that's not what happens, because I don't know if anyone was familiar with what Jurassic World went through when it was in development and when they were making this movie. I followed it pretty closely, and there were a bunch of thrown out scripts that were happening.
I'm pretty sure it was in
like
hell.
The development was in hell.
I felt like half the script that they gave us was thrown out, to be quite honest.
No, it may have been, but.
Which, that's the movie process. Sometimes stuff gets cut. Maybe the divorce resolution got cut, for instance.
Hey, guys, remember that time we helped Grandpa fix up that car?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
These two little boys are absolute grease monkeys who can fix up a car that's been there for a long time.
Hey, you still have those matches I gave you? When did you give him matches? Off camera? I mean, it's cool that you gave him matches off camera because, you need them now. Oh, quick, I forgot to give the guy matches. Let's write that in really quick.
Awesome. Another thing I thought was fun, I love this. So the Velociraptors, you had Charlie, Delta, Echo, and then Blue.
Names,
I love that.
Names,
that was great.
I didn't like the names.
I like the fact that it was Blue and then Charlie, Delta, Echo.
Yeah,
why is Blue special?
Not Beta. I guess he didn't want to call it Beta. It would hurt its feelings because, he didn't want it to be the Beta of the pack.
I mean, it's Bravo, I think, is the...
Yeah, Bravo's the one, yeah.
True,
Bravo.
True. I'm not up to date on my military alphabet / numbers. Or whatever you want to call it.
You're going Greek there.
Yeah, I'm going Greek right now.
Okay, so here's the other thing. Now, after I say this, I'm only going to say positive things because it was definitely a fun movie. But I'm not entirely... Okay, so the ending, you have the one Velociraptor is blown up right in front of Chris Pratt. We saw that. Then the three Velociraptors come in and attack the Indominus Rex. I don't know if all three were killed or not. I know one for sure was set on fire. I know one of them looked definitely dead, and the other one was, like, thrown really far to the side. But regardless of whether that one lived or not, which is Blue, how did she come running from, like, the back of the park?
Well, how did the T-Rex, how did the T-Rex, yeah, sorry.
I'm trying to think, I mean, I was, like, making a count, like, in my head with the raptors and stuff, and I know one got just blown up by a rocket launcher. I don't think that one's coming back. But they made it seem like the one that got hit with the rocket launcher is the one who came in the end.
To me, it was definitely the one that got flung at the beginning, because Blue, you know, stood up for Pratt, and Blue was the one that, you know, Pratt had kind of the deepest connection with in this film. And Blue got thrown to the sign by the Indominus Rex when it chose to, you know, stand up for Pratt's character. And, you know, it was something that, you know, it got thrown to the side, and I thought it had died, obviously, because that's what they were trying to go for in this movie, was to make you surprised when it finally came back to save the day. The one that got thrown into the incinerator, clearly dead. The one that got blown up by the rocket launcher, clearly dead. And the one that I can't really remember exactly what happened to it, clearly dead.
but still, like, it came running from, like, the back of the park, and I was a little confused with the presentation of it. And
right, I mean, there was a lot of things going on that
could have distracted
us.
I've got another thing, too. So Bryce Dallas Howard's character, in the beginning, she's wearing these, you know, big, big clogs, you know, big old heels. And we don't see her shoes again till the end of the movie when she's still wearing the heels. This is a detail that I only noticed because I saw the movie with my mom, but it's a detail nonetheless. So discuss. Can Bryce Dallas Howard's character do all that running, all that jungling with,
no.
you know, while wearing heels?
No. Not at all. There's no way you can outrun a Tyrannosaurus Rex in heels.
All right, well, now that we've gone to all that stuff, let's get to the positives. One, I love the giant water dinosaur thing.
The Mosasaur.
That they show in the beginning. Yeah, Mosasaurus. They show at the beginning being awesome, you know, eating the shark. And then, of course, that was the thing that ate the one British, you know, nanny, and also the thing that ate...
Well, the
a
bunch of things ate the British nanny. Can we talk about that scene for a second, because it's probably the most over-the-top death in a Jurassic Park movie, and maybe one of the most over-the-top deaths I've seen in a while.
Look, I like being thrown up in the air by these flying pterodactyl-like things.
If then get dropped in the water, picked up again, and only to be eaten along with the thing that's trying to eat you.
It's symbolic of capitalism or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's symbolism behind it.
Especially because she was British, right?
Yes, yes. Because they're greedy. We hate the British at White Noise.
I mean... Do we hate the British? We should probably make that stance clear.
No,
I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I like Ben Kingsley.
I like
their acting ability.
I like Charles Dance. We can't. Don't.
But do we like their nannies, though? That's the question.
We can't hate Charles Dance. Charles Dance had a nanny, though. When he was a young lad, he had a nanny. I think that.
Well, as you know, Charles Dance is my favorite person probably of all time, so I guess I can't hate on Charles Dance.
No, British nannies are never given very positive portrayals on movies, now that I think about it.
Like, remember South Park? Tist? The episode that had all the nannies in it?
Yeah.
That's what I think about every time I think of British nannies.
I think of, like, little orphan Annie. Cotton. Yeah. I think of, like, little orphan Annie with the orphanage. And how no one was very nice in that movie to poor Annie.
Did you see the black remake of Annie?
No, no.
Like, with Jamie Foxx as the dad?
It's Will Smith's daughter, right?
I feel like I'm the insensitive guy after bringing that up.
where were we going with this?
I don't know. You brought up Annie because
I don't know. We were talking about
because
we were talking
Annie
about
has
British.
A lot of British nannies, I guess.
Okay then.
Obviously, David's
Jurassic World.
I said obviously David's never seen this movie.
Okay, so other good things about Jurassic World, as you mentioned, I love the Jimmy Fallon scene, which is probably absolutely perfect in what I expect at a theme park. I like the fact that you have the owner of the park flying the helicopter, even though he's not an experienced helicopter flyer. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, there was clear disaster. There was clear disaster awaiting that team. That scene.
The guy gets on the helicopter and starts puking on the side because he couldn't handle the guy's driving.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a scene that was setting up for, it was foreshadowing for the events that would happen later. I was like, oh yeah, this guy's going to crash the helicopter because he sucks at flying it. Either that or he's going to save the day with the helicopter. Because he finally learns how to be good at piloting it.
It was definitely the first one, though. I was pretty sure it was going to be the first one.
Yeah. And, I mean, I definitely liked the ties to the first movie. You have a nostalgia involved with that. you know, like we said, the Jurassic Park shirt that he was wearing, them visiting the old park facilities that had kind of been overgrown with vegetation was a pretty nice, it was a cool looking aesthetic to look at when you're watching the film.
The 92 Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that was very cool.
That they knew how to repair, of course.
Yeah, that they knew how to repair because they helped their grandpa that one time.
They're real grease monkeys.
Real grease monkeys, those guys.
And then, I mean, obviously the dinosaurs, they look great in the movie. I mean, it was very cool to watch them. Yeah, you know, the animation has definitely come a long ways, but I will say that there is still an element of the first movie that I think makes it almost feel more real than these new movies that are coming in. That's there's more use of the animatronics, so the actors are actually looking at something, they're behaving and reacting and responding to something that they can actually see and is tangible to them. And I think that these new movies with the amount of like CGI involved, they kind of miss that element in my opinion.
I mean,
don't seem as real and like genuine to me.
That might just be, like, the actual imaging, but, like, I mean, this was still, I believe, a lot, you know, no small part of puppeteering going on. I mean, there was, like, a two-column, eight-row list of puppeteers for it. So at least the Velociraptors, I think, were...
Yeah, it worked for that, definitely. And the Raptors were done really well, I think. It was, you know...
I'm not sure if they're cute or not, or if I want to pet one, just because, like...
You want a pet?
I figured this out. The only way to make I can make anything cute. All I have to do is have it playfully turn its head to the side. You know, just tilt it ever so slightly, and then all of a sudden it becomes cute.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Seth. One thing I like about this movie is I like how everything involved with Dr. Wong with the...
Dr. Wu.
Wu. He's B.D. Wong's the actor.
Yeah, it's B.D. Wong, you're right.
Yeah, I was gonna say I got confused in my head, but
I
like how
you were Wong, Billy. Thank you all. I'll be here all week.
Anyways, I like how he got away with all the genetics and all the stuff from the military. So you know, we clearly are setting up for another movie. It's gonna be great, guys.
And
The amount of like institutional unawareness with that kind of bugged me. Like, you know, oh yes, we did this, this, and this, and the guy had absolute, like, he's technically his boss, but had absolutely no idea.
But also, like, why, everything they put into it is like, yeah, you obviously had the tree frogs, right? Oh, yeah, he probably has some kind of stealth ability from the cuddle fish.
Yeah,
put it there.
That was the part of the movie to me that definitely was pseudoscience. Just because you put cuttlefish DNA in something doesn't mean it's going to be able to change colors.
That
whole thing. Protected. He went camouflage. Oh, no, that means, you know, he must have this gene. Or, oh, my gosh, he was thermo-invisible. And he's like, oh, he must have this DNA. And then it's like, next thing you know, oh, my God, he loves cheeseburgers. Oh, no, he's got human DNA.
Or when he's like, oh, no, raptors, they get along with it. So it must have raptor DNA. Too.
I feel like that scene was hit with the editing stick and like originally had like four examples of what the dinosaur could do and included, you know, random stuff from in between.
They should have just called it the Frankensaurus, like a Frankenstein dinosaur. Just something that was thrown together by the geneticists in a lab and just thrown out there to be terrifying.
Like, I get the idea that, like, okay, the different parts of DNA will allow this thing to do things that they weren't expecting, right?
Which, in a movie, it works, but, it's something that's not...
Yeah, but it's still kind of like, every single thing the Indominus Rex has, oh, that explains this plot here. Oh, wow, that trait we put in there really explains this one. And it's always, like, after the fact, too, it's like, oh, wow, yeah, probably the cuttlefish guys. And, of course, they have Velociraptor DNA. I mean, why wouldn't it have Velociraptor
DNA? It has to have Velociraptor DNA, so the Velociraptors couldn't stop it.
Yeah, the one kind of dinosaur that, you know, the humans are going to use for their side, of course it had that DNA.
It's their alpha now.
The raptor's got a new alpha.
Okay. In terms of horrible campy scenes, I did think the whole "they're communicating" line was just like, no shit. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's their alpha now. That's great. Crap.
I don't know. I mean, it definitely was a summer blockbuster. It was definitely popcorn. It was definitely camp at its purest.
did any of you guys ever see How to Train Your Dragon 2?
Yeah.
Okay. So the ending of that kind of reminded me of all the the Rexes, you know, basically using their mind control powers, you know, on each of the Velociraptors. Kind of reminded me of the ending of that. They're like, oh, no, they're mine. No, these are my babies. No, they're not. You're not even real. It's just like...
And, I want to say that, you know, as much as we made fun of this movie, it definitely was a fun film. Obviously, David liked it more than me and Seth, but I still enjoyed it. It was, you summed it up as, it was so bad.
I mean,
y'all don't have to lie. You have to lie to yourself, David?
Y'all don't have to lie. The audience should, our listeners obviously should not go see this movie from the way we've talked about it.
Look, man, it's not bad.
They should have seen it by now if it's a spoiler cast. That's really what comes down to anyways.
It's not bad to have those kind of movies. We need so bad it's good, quote unquote. You know, and even if I'm probably, you know, slandering it a bit, I mean, we need these kind of movies. It is important to have these. These are cultural. These are cult classics, you know. And watching this was a very quotable movie. This is a movie we'll still be talking about years from now. I can say that with utmost confidence.
And, like, compared to, like, Age of Ultron, right? Age of Ultron was one of those movies where, like, it was kind of annoying the way that weenisms appeared everywhere, right?
I don't know.
And how it was, like, kind of happy at times and also kind of dumb and, like, emotional resonance, blah, blah. And it makes maybe, like, this movie more because while this movie was
dumber.
It
was dumber than Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it was dumber, but it also didn't take itself that seriously either. And in that regard, it made it more enjoyable watch for me.
I don't know. I think that there was less creative struggling for this. I mean, I think that's why Age of Ultron was what it was, is because there was some behind-the-scenes stuff kind of murking it. And that's unfortunate that it shows on the big screen. But no, this was...
Don't worry, you'll get your director's cut of that movie, so we'll get another 45 minutes to see what Whedon had to cut out.
So here's my question,
guys. Can I get the Topher Grace cut? So, like, where it's, like, all the good parts?
Yeah.
So here's a question, guys. Which one of us is going to be the director for Jurassic World 3 after making a small indie film?
Should be me.
Should be you.
Because I'm the one that's most passionate, and I'm the one who likes it.
And he's got his foot in the door. He's going to, you know, butt elbows with Nicolas Cage.
More importantly, he'll do it for, like, free, pretty much.
I'll do it for free. So yeah. As long as I get named after a corporation, or my movie gets called, like, Pepsi World or something like that.
Yeah, it won't be Jurassic World anymore. It'll be like...
Not going to lie, I want to know what a Pepsi store looks like.
I imagine it looks like, you know, the kind of, like, brought to my head about, you remember in Transformers 1 where the cube, like, turns random pieces of advertisements into robots? I mean, that kind of reminded me of this. I mean, just in terms of the just absurd product placement, that's probably my favorite product placement of all time in a movie, just in terms of being over the top and so tasteless in its execution that, you know, you're actually having these corporations represented by Transformers. You get, like, the Xbox Transformer, the Pepsi Transformer that shoots cans at people. So I imagine that, you know, a Pepsi sword look like a dinosaur with a Pepsi can for a head or something ridiculous like that.
Or like with, like, a Pepsi cannon, like, just mechanically attached to its right arm.
Yeah. Or just, like, a dinosaur that looks normal but is painted blue with Pepsi written on the side of it.
I think it was Austin Powers as the all-time greatest, like, product placement scenes of all time. Because I think, like, he'd go, like, I think at one point, like, oh, no, it's not Austin Powers. It was, I think it was Wayne's World. That's what it was.
Party on, Wayne.
I think it would be kind of fun if we just did a, you know, spoiler cast on just product placement in movies and these big blockbusters and pointing out all the different ones.
can we add TV shows? Because I think 30
sure,
Rock does
absolutely.
It best, personally. Because, like, 30 Rock has, like, you know, hey, you know, we're supposed to, hey, go ahead and talk about Snapple on your show. Why would we talk about Snapple, the most delicious drink on this side of the Amazon?
I just think
did
that,
you
like,
know that in every Snapple bottle there's, like, basically, you know, talk about this. Why would we do that since it's so awesome?
The funny thing is, like, The Lost World, the way that they did the product placement in that movie was a lot different than this one. Like, I mean, when you looked at The Lost World, there was an entire movie that was filmed on the actual island, and then there was a separate movie that was pretty much filmed in San Diego. And so when he's on the island, there's barely any product placement outside of, you know, the Jeeps that are Mercedes, obviously. They've been tied to Jurassic Park for a long time. But then, you know, there's been almost no product placement for the entire movie. And then, you know, they bring the T-Rex to San Diego, and the T-Rex goes on this rampage, and there's just product placement everywhere for about 20 straight minutes. So, like, you know, the T-Rex will be running and bashing through a Blockbuster. There'll be, like, a 76, you know, the giant 76 ball for the advertisement of that, you know, gas station general store rolling around on the ground. I mean, it was just hilarious. When I went back and watched that movie just to see the product placement that was stuffed in that 20 minutes.
Well, anyways, I think we should probably wrap up. This is the point where we give our grades on the David scale. And, Dave, would you like to explain what the David scale is again?
I can't even didn't really remember, but my own scale. But I mean, the A plus is basically a masterpiece. The A means, you know, it's amazing and you know, not quite a masterpiece, not quite a perfect movie, but still an amazing film. A minus means, you know, pretty amazing, kind of excellent, just a step below that. And then B plus is, you know, is great. B is, you know, slightly less great. B minus is, you know, really good to pretty great. And then, you know, C plus would be just your average movie. And then from there, everything's pretty much just crap.
I'm trying to find the official scale because I have a picture of it, but it's just lost in a sea of other dumb pictures on my phone. This is like the important watch. Here we go. A plus masterpiece. A excellent. A minus very great. B plus great. B very good. B minus good. C plus above average. C average. C minus mediocre. D through F varying degrees of shit.
Yeah. So pretty much, exactly. I pretty much nailed it in my recital of my own thoughts back then. So yeah. I mean, you want me to start it off, or what about you guys?
Go for it, man.
Well, I'm gonna go with B plus. I mean, this movie, I mean, in terms of my emotional resonance with it and having been personally attached to the franchise, I really, really, really enjoyed this film. But there are a lot of shortcomings to this movie. I mean, y'all pointed out plenty of them, obviously, for this podcast.
What?
But
no.
But there's a lot of problems with the script. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, I got to see the dinosaurs again. It did it in a way that was somewhat fresh to me compared to the other movies. And in terms of a summer blockbuster movie, I had a lot of fun at this one, more fun than I usually have at these summer blockbusters. So I have to give that some credit. It's no masterpiece, but, you know, Seth said it might be a cult classic. I don't know if it's going to go that far, but I think it'll, you know, it's going to be. It was a solid installment to this franchise and brought some life back to it in a time when it really needed to get some life back in the franchise. So I give it a B+.
What about you, Seth?
Seth is extinct.
Seth is no longer here, I guess. He did just send me a YouTube video.
You want to go first, Billy, then?
Oh, sure, yeah, I guess I'll go now.
Or I can point out another scene that I really like real quick, just to shout out.
Go for it.
Because I really hated Jurassic Park 3, and a lot of fans were put down by that movie who were longtime fans of the franchise because, yeah, they introduced the Spinosaurus into the movie, and he was a complete... He kills the T-Rex, which is the icon of Jurassic Park, because it's basically, you know, Joe Johnson trying to say that, oh, this is my franchise now. We're doing things different. We're upping the ante. We're putting a scarier dinosaur into this movie. And this movie does a good job of kind of shutting that out by having the T-Rex literally bash through a skeleton of a Spinosaurus in its introduction. Like, it runs through the center and busts through the skeleton of the Spinosaurus as it's going to fight the Indominus Rex.
Now that I'm not muted, I can go ahead and, you know,
sweet.
basically give the rant that I thought I was giving that no one heard. It's hard to say that anything that shattered all these box office records isn't, you know, amazing. But for me, I'm going to give this the grade that I gave it, you know, in our group message. I'm going to give it a B-plus. That is very, very, like I said, I watched the whole movie. This was not a good movie, I don't think, for, you know, in terms of what it needed to accomplish for me as a viewer. The action sequences, while, you know, there were some pretty great ones, that last one in particular, I just, you know, I couldn't really buy in as much as I wanted to buy in. It didn't really immerse me. So I have to give it a B-, but the plus is from that last action sequence, because that is what, you know, I kind of wish the movie was, and I will give it tip its cap for accomplishing that. It was, you know, it was fresh. You know, the Mosasaur at the end, while maybe a calculated cop-out, it was, you know, it was still accomplished what, you know, it made me go gasp at me, like, oh, my God, and, you know, and it had enough of those, you know, nerd moments, and even some of the meta stuff was really funny to me, and, you know, it was well-crafted in certain respects, but the plot was hazy. They introduced that divorce storyline, which... You know, you say that's only 3 minutes. Well, that's 3 minutes that, you know, could have been spent elsewhere.
But Seth, he Googled it.
But he Googled it, and he cried. Yeah. He cried delivering the most unemotionally resonant line possible, quote-unquote, I Googled it. Oh, gosh.
There
had to
be
a
reason they did that, though.
Product placement. That's why they did it. But yeah, no.
So happy. He was so happy that Google's such a functional company with a great service.
But yeah, no, a B-minus that, you know... I want to give it more because of that last sequence, but I can't. It's still not a B movie to me.
Well, I think to a certain degree, if C plus means above average, right? Mm-hmm. That's probably about what this movie is. But it's got, you know, it's still got dinosaurs in it, and, you know, I got to watch a T-Rex fight another T-Rex, and Chris Pratt and all the unintentional comedy which made it. It's kind of funny. the bad scenes that made me laugh actually made me like the movie more, unintentional or not. I don't know. To me, it's like a classic B-minus movie that was just fun to watch, even though it probably isn't, you know, I don't even know if it's really a B-minus, but I think it was, I liked it more than Age of Ultron, which I gave a B-minus, so in that regard, I have to give this one a B-minus. It was fun. It's definitely a fun movie. Just don't go in there taking it too seriously, and you'll have a good time. But, like I said, this is a spoiler cast, so hopefully people listening to this actually, you know, watch the movie.
Comment. Yeah. Tell us 101 reasons why you disagree with us.
All right, David, close. I'm Billy White. That's David Hunter and Steph Juniac. David, close us out.
All right, that's all I got.